I already sort of introduced Jan's talk by accident.
So you can remember?
You have to introduce yourself.
The shirt, the color of the sky.
If you want just a laser, this is a laser.
Okay. Hello. So I'm Jan Wienold. I'm working at EPFL in Lausanne. And I'm a bit sad that I'm alone here because it was planned to be a combined presentation, but Aisha couldn't come due to very important private reasons. That's why I want to give definitely that you don't remember only me. It's very important that all the scientific results from the sky measurements and model were done by Aisha and Martine. And my role was more or less the implementation of the model into Chandelit. So, what I want to talk about, first of all, why do we need the color for the sky? Well, we saw that already. There is a need for that, but I will tell a little bit more. A little bit the basis of this development, so the measurements of the sky spectrum done by TU Berlin, the model which is behind, and the preliminary model based on CIE sky types. A little bit about the implementation, how it's done in Chandelit, and a very small comparison at the end between this and the preterm model, which was, I think, like 10 years ago introduced here by Mark Stark. Well, the why, well, it was mentioned several times before. At the moment, we are using mainly CIE and Paris sky models in radiance, and yeah, they look grayish, color neutral. We saw that before, so we have no color information. And but if you talk about non-visual effects, we have the spectral influence, we have the peaking in the blue, and that's why we want to have the color also in our light source when we calculate it. But also, for the visual comfort studies, it would be good, especially if you talk about color in the room and color rendering. Of course, we would like to have also the color of the sky. And yeah, we want to have, of course, a higher realism in our renderings as well. So the basis of all this is the weather station, which is located on the rooftop of the TU Berlin. And this is the fancy device they have installed there. It's a spectral measurement device which scans the sky in the 145 Trigenza patches. And they do this since 2014, all the sky patches. They measure the spectral power distribution even further than the visual spectrum. And they scan every second minute for now, like more than 4 years. So they have a lot of data. This is how it looks like in action. There's a small video. Maybe you can see there is here internally a small mirror, or sometimes there's also filter in there to deal with different ranges of intensities as well. And yeah, it takes 1 minute to scan the whole sky. And yeah, this is another example. What happens here on the right side, you see information about the color, correlated color temperature, I think. Yeah, it's like that. And this is over the course of like 2 hours now displayed here. So what happens in general, the sky is measured with a spectral power distribution here. It's evaluated in many ways, and one output is, of course, to have the luminance, the luminance distribution here for all the patches, excluding the sun area. So, oops, I'm sorry for that. This area here has overflows, and this is not possible to measure spectrally. So this is always excluded, but for the rest. And then here on the lower part, this is one type of evaluation, transferring this in a correlated color temperature per each patch. And you can imagine there is finally a lot of data, so they have a huge database. for all the measurements, and they have implemented many, many routines, first to check everything, and then also, for example, to classify the skies according to the CIE sky types, the 15 which are available. And so this can be done totally automatically here with that tool. Now I come to the next steps. What we want to have, or I push them all the time, that's why I'm standing here, because I was always pushing them, saying you have so nice measurement device, I want to have at the end a model which is also implemented in Radiance. So I was the guy who had to implement it. And the model, they were checking, of course, first the literature. And actually, there is a model which was presented by Chain, Dumetier, and Marc Fontagnon in 1999 already, saying if you have a clear sky, that the correlated color temperature of a certain position in the sky is depending mainly on the luminance. And for an overcast sky, the temperature is nearly, correlated color temperature is nearly constant. And so they were checking that with the data. And actually, they found out that this correlation is can be reproduced. And this was more or less the basis of the data. And what was done was a regression with the data they had for one from 1 year of measurements. And then the coefficients of these equations were derived by the regression. And and then I came into action more or less. And so I had to implement like this one here. And the idea was to use, at the moment we are not doubting the existing sky luminance distribution models. We think still that Paris is the best one, but there will be a later phase of this project where, of course, this will be checked as well, but this will take a little bit longer. And so we use an existing model, and what we do is we change the color information in there. So we make the Paris sky colorful. So we have the Paris model here. We when you apply it in Radiance, you have the luminance in during the ray tracing available. So in the cal file, you can calculate with this relation the color temperature, and then finally with a daylight locus, we can calculate the x, y coordinates and transfer it finally to the Radiance RGB. And and Gendelit, the modifications were rather small for that. It generates, of course, a modified output to consider that with a new option. So now you apply Gendelit if you want to, with a minus C option, then you get a colored output. It uses per default the daylight locus, which was derived from that, the data from Berlin. But you can use also the CIE daylight locus with that option here to override the, this default thing. And if you have your own data set, if you have set by yourself such a fancy device, you can use also your own daylight locus. This is that equation I showed already before. But this is just for, at the moment, it's for development in there. I don't know if we keep it on the long term. I'm not sure how many people are using that finally. But it's now in there. What happens if you call Gendelit? This is a typical way how you call it here. And if you add this minus C option here, then what you get finally is not a bright fog anymore. You get a color fog. And it's using now a modified calculation file, the Paris OMCCAL, and you have some more parameters which are given to this CAL file. They are not really interesting. The only thing which might be interesting for some of you is that here the, I think it's number 11, is the epsilon, which is the sky clearness factor. So you have that already when you call Gendelit, you get directly this sky clearness factor. So you and use it also for other purposes, maybe. So what happens if you apply this? For example, this is a sky which was measured in Berlin with a rather high direct irradiation and low diffuse, so a very clear sky. So what happens if you use the existing one? It's of course gray, and then we get a blue sky. Recording this. For comparison reason, I plotted here the pre-amp model, which was implemented by Mark Stock. It has another input. Yeah, it's not using the radiation. You just supply the turbidity there. That's why the energy you get if you calculate the horizontal irradiance or the illuminance afterwards is much lower than in the other model. And what you see also that here you have a brownish to the horizon, and it's not there in the other model. And this would be for a CIE sky. Of course, they have all the same exposure here to display it here on that screen. And this happens if you do the same thing in winter. The other one was in the summer. Again, we get this color information. The luminance is exactly the same in both of them. This is checked, so there's no energy loss or gain or whatever. So it's exactly the same luminance. It's just the color which is changing. Here again, the comparison to the other model, which has this brownish at the horizon, which looks really nice if you have renderings, but it's not cannot be reproduced by these measurements what Hugh Berlin had on the sky. And this is again a comparison to this GIE sky. And what happens if it's overcast? Actually, this is again the gray one, and you think it's also gray, but in reality it's a little bit greenish. So the color is slightly different. It's not totally gray. And so it looks like this. Again, this one, I didn't get it into color neutral. Whatever turbidity you're using, it's always like that. So the current status of it, the whole thing is a preliminary model. Yeah, it was really developed in the last 3 months, so we will still work on that. It's already implemented, so you can use it. Gendelit is updated in the head release, and also on the NREL server, if you download the pre-compiled versions, it's in there. It's also fully download compatible, so you don't have to change your workflow if you use the Gendelit. If you don't use the minus C option, you get exactly the same thing as before. It's just when you apply the C option, you get a different one. This is a very important restriction at the moment. We have only clear skies and overcast skies. So the intermediate sky, we don't know yet. It looks like that we can do also like a blend between the two, like a mixture, and get somehow not too bad correlations. Of course, the deviation will be much higher because it's much more difficult. At the moment, the status is maybe not so nice for you, but I wanted to be on the safe side. So it really works only if you have a clear sky when the epsilon is larger than 4.5, or if the epsilon is smaller than 1.065. For all epsilons in between, it falls back to the gray model, so you get the same output as you had before for intermediate skies at the moment. Outlook, yeah, of course, we want to have the intermediate skies as well, because we want, on the long run, of course, we want to have annual simulations, so that it's possible. So it's in the pipeline, but it's not available at the moment. And we want to have a full validation of it. So this is at the moment still in the development phase, and it's using the first year data, and the plan is to do the validation with a second year and see if this derived model also fits to this data. And what is very important, because everything was measured in Berlin, there is a plan to have a measurement campaign within the IEA task with other locations to measure there also, for example, the daylight locus and other things, to make it adjustable, this model. That's the hope. If it's like this later on, we will see. And of course, we want to have a publication on that. So I'm at the end. Important is that the work from Aisha is supported by the Velux Foundation. And yeah, that's it for now. So thank you for your attention. And
quickie, from most of the fisheye photographs that I recall of clear skies, you do get noticeable lightning where the blue disappears at the horizon and it just goes, I mean, it's overcooked in the prismatic model where it goes brown, but it usually seems to go light, doesn't it, and the colour washes out, all that scattering upwards from dusty surfaces and whatever.
I don't.
Could it be just something, the fact that the Tregenza resolution doesn't pick that up.
Maybe. Yeah. It's. I don't know exactly the angle where it's ending. So let me check quickly this. Because as you've seen, the measurement is not covering the full patches of the. Of the Tregenza. So, you don't see it. No, this one.
So the question is, what is the gap here to the horizon? And I cannot tell you, actually.
It's only, if it's the exact Tregenza patch, I think it's only about a degree or something, 2 degrees, but...
No, but the cone is smaller than the Tregenza patch.
It's
a bit smaller. Yeah. So actually, if you look, this is what is really scanned here. And finally, it scans only 50% of the sky.
Oh, so it's less than the Kropman scanner. The Kropman scanner is...
Yeah. No, it's you saw, it's another...
Yeah,
it looks different.
But
yeah.
It's not using the exact...
No.
All right, great.
It covers the whole sky dome, but...
Yeah.
There are holes in between, which are in principle not so serious, you know, you cover the whole sky. But I don't know how much is this gap here really.
Well, it would be interesting to see the HDR of the super clear measurement next to the sky models, just as a kind of visual comparison, if it exists.
They didn't take HDR images.
They had these time lapse images, right? Like.
But these were just photographs. I don't think it was.
You still get color out.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Cool. I have a question that's maybe more for Greg than for you. Wouldn't that be a good opportunity for the spectral pre-filtering that you did with Elena, where the main reflectance, in this case transmission, would be the window, so I have the right RGB values when I'm inside?
Okay, so color is complicated if you're talking about what it looks like, because that involves your own adaptation, and something also applied to the previous talk is that if you're trying to visualize these things, you really have to adapt, and having a camera take pictures in different environments, you might get a consistent measurement, but it doesn't tell you what it looks like. And I don't know if I'm really addressing your question, but we could take color into account, and I think this is a great way to do it for the sky, you know, just a simple model. But then you have to figure out what is the human adaptation to that color, and what does it actually look like. And I did have a paper some years back about how to compute white point adaptations and how to incorporate those into your renderings, but it's not often done. We don't do it as a regular thing.
I was referring to another paper where you did the spectral pre-filtering calculation instead of doing spectral calculations, doing RGB calculations.
Right, that's the same paper I'm talking about, yeah.
Okay.
So the spectral pre-filtering is a shortcut, so you don't have to have 9 spectral samples. You can get by with 3, but you have to do this sort of operation. So you're suggesting doing it with the sky spectrum. I don't know that because the sky spectrum is so broad, I don't think it's going to make much difference. because it's just, there's not much going on there.
And also the transmission is not really spectrally selected.
Right. So it's more, it's going to make more of a difference for things like fluorescent fixtures or LED fixtures where you have really spiky spectra.
Okay, should we break for coffee, and if we could come back at 10 past. Thank you.